Welcome to Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm Eric Pfeiffer from Hoosier Ag Today, and over the next 30 minutes or so, CJ Miller, Andy Eubank, and I will bring you the top news impacting Indiana's most important industry, agriculture. Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin has his latest Indiana farm forecast. We'll have grain market analysis following an up-and-down week. We'll share how Purdue is working to educate Indiana's future pork farmers, and why some are getting pretty anxious about not just diesel prices, but diesel availability. We begin, though, with the impact of the avian flu on our holiday plans. Is there a turkey shortage as we approach Thanksgiving?
I don't think you're going to have to worry about whether or not you can carve your turkey on Thanksgiving. It's going to be there. Maybe smaller, but it'll be there.
That's Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack explaining that there will be turkey on the table this Thanksgiving, despite avian influenza resulting in the death of nearly 8 million turkeys.
In terms of people's being able to get a Thanksgiving turkey, they're going to be able to get a Thanksgiving turkey. Now, whether they can get a 20-pound turkey, that may be a challenge based on location. Because some of the turkeys that are being raised right now for Thanksgiving may not have the full amount of time to get the 20 pounds.
That turkey will cost you more this year, though. USDA data shows turkey prices are up around 28% compared to this time a year ago, with the price of an 8 to 16-pound turkey rising to $1.47 a pound, up from $1.15 last year. So how big of a turkey do you need for your table?
So we generally recommend to follow about a 1 pound per person rule, and then about a pound and a half if you would like to have leftovers.
That's Meredith Carruthers from the USDA Meat and Poultry Hotline. She recommends thawing your turkey in the refrigerator so that the bird's temperature stays below 40 degrees, the temperature at which bacteria can multiply. Thawing in the refrigerator will take some time, though, about 24 hours for each 5 pounds of turkey.
And it is safe to keep that turkey in the refrigerator 1 to 2 days after it is fully thawed.
The USDA Meat and Poultry Hotline will be open on Thanksgiving Day from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. Eastern Time at 888-MP-HOTLINE or by visiting ask.usda.gov.
Speaking of Thanksgiving and getting that turkey for your table, CJ Miller is here now, and he highlights one Indiana farm that produces whole turkeys for your table, Gunthorpe Farms in LaGrange County.
Turkey season is definitely a crazy time of year for us.
And that's Greg Gunthorpe, owner of Gunthorpe Farms. They raise as many as 14,000 turkeys on their 275-acre pasture farm in northeastern Indiana. Greg says they've been raising and selling whole turkeys now for about 15 years.
We got started raising turkeys at the request of one of our customers in Indianapolis, Gusta Market. We were selling them some pork and some chicken and some duck at the time, and we thought, oh yeah, we'll try raising turkeys for you.
Greg's turkey farm is unique for several different reasons.
Raised on pasture is unique. You know, most turkeys aren't raised outside nowadays. We're a small independent operation. That's unique because the turkey industry, just like a lot of other agriculture, is consolidated. That we have our own USDA-inspected processing plant right on the farm is extremely unique.
Another unique feature of Gunthorpe Farms is that they raise both poultry and red meat. Greg says livestock diversification has its challenges, but also it has its advantages.
It requires more management. It requires some different equipment for some of the different species, where if we were doing the same dollars or pounds of just one species, it could be easier to train the help. You could have less equipment. But the diversification also creates some opportunities and some advantages. If we have an issue or if the market is down in one, we've got another enterprise that might pull its weight.
Greg says he's thankful that his family farm business of selling whole turkeys has grown rapidly in such a short period of time.
You know, if each of our turkeys averages 10 people. We've had Thanksgiving dinners where there's 70,000 plus people eating a Gunthorpe Farms turkey. I would have never thought 15 years ago that our little farm would be doing something like that.
For more information, visit GunthorpeFarms.com. You can also find that link at HoosierAgToday.com. I'm CJ Miller.
I was surprised in some of our trials. Just, you know, some of our fields and some of our trials had the best yields they'd ever seen.
And that's Purdue Extension corn specialist Dan Quinn talking about corn yields they've pulled off trials so far this season on the latest Purdue Crop Chat podcast, found now at HoosierAgToday.com. He credits the later August rains for the help.
We saw some issues in terms of what the June weather did to the crop. In terms of tip back, we had some, you know, grain fill issues as well, early grain fill issues. But I think you look at the conditions we saw in the month of August and, you know, how we got some good yields out of the beans. I think some of that saved some of the corn yields too.
According to Quinn, corn disease was also very limited this year,
especially in the really critical periods. We had some of it come on late. I know tar spot came on late. Northern corn leaf blight was pretty pronounced this year. Some gray leaf spot, but they came on late. They really came back, you know, on a period that, you know, fungicides is really not going to help you. You're not going to see a whole lot of yield loss.
Quinn says planting dates likely played a big factor in corn yield this season.
I'd actually say some of the stuff that got in a little bit later out-yielded some of the stuff that got in earlier. You know, you think about corn, you know, that critical growth stage when that tassel comes out, you know, early, mid-July, it just, you know, you get a little bit earlier planted corn, it's going to hit that growth stage a little bit earlier. And I think some of that earlier planted corn got into those more critical growth stages and got a little more stressed because it was so dry in June and beginning July. And those later planted corn actually caught some more of that moisture and that rainfall at more of those critical periods.
I'm joined by Quinn and Purdue Extension soybean specialist Sean Castile for the Purdue Crop Chat podcast, found wherever you listen to podcasts. Bring us along in the combine as you wrap up harvest, as we also discuss what you should be thinking about for 2023. It's been an up and down week for the grain markets with Analysis Now. Let's welcome back CJ Miller.
Thank you, Eric. This review brought to you by Seed Genetics Direct, providing quality seed, free delivery, personalized service, and local research data along with published prices. Check them out at seedgeneticsdirect.com. With grain market analysis, it's time to check in with Brian Basting with Advanced Trading. A turnaround for the grain markets Friday, in response to the U.S. dollar value taking a tumble over the past few days. Brian, what were some of the other factors that drove the grain markets to close out the week?
There was word overnight there, Friday morning, CJ, that we had word from China that they're going to lessen the restrictions on COVID. So, you know, China is the largest purchaser of U.S. beans by far, CJ. So any sign that they are looking to provide more open environment, if you will, for COVID, at least not as stringent, maybe as a better phrase to phrase it, would be supportive. That trickled back into the bean market there on Friday after a sharp sell-off on Thursday. We've also got some weather uncertainty going on in South America. We've got some weather, rainfall moving through parts of southern Argentina this weekend. However, it is forecast to turn dry and warm again as we move into the last 10 days of November here. So those are some of the other driving factors. I think the bean market, looking at some tight stocks still, and the need for a very large South American harvest going forward. So corn market is looking at the South American weather too, and also the China situation. So those things, is along with the weak dollar that you mentioned earlier, are probably the key factors. Again, the dollar has been a bit of an anchor on the market here in terms of a stronger dollar in recent months, making our products more expensive. So any signs of a shift in that, or at least a moderation in that, whether it be moderation in inflation, whatever the case may be, that would be moderate the strength of the dollar and would make our products more competitive.
Once again, Brian Basting with Advanced Trading. Settlements from Friday, December corn up 4.75 at 6.58, March at 6.63, 3.5 higher. January beans climbing 27 cents to 14.50, March at 14.53 3/4, up 25 3/4, and December wheat gaining 10 1/4 at 8.13 3/4. In the livestock markets, December live cattle down $1.55 to $151.52, and December lean hogs 52 cents lower at $84.35. Don't forget the Indiana Farm Equipment and Technology Expo, presented by Agra Financial and Reynolds Farm Equipment, coming up December 13th, 14th, and 15th at Grand Park in Westfield. For more information, check out IndianaFarmExpo.com. I'm CJ Miller with Hoosier Ag Today, and this is Hoosier Ag This Week.
Have you ever considered a career in agriculture? There are dozens of agribusinesses that have opportunities to work in this exciting field. These are high-paying positions with on-the-job training and advancement. On December 15th from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Grand Park in Westfield, Indiana, these companies will be on hand for the Indiana Ag Career Fair. Come talk with these organizations. Then walk the show floor of the Indiana Farm Equipment and Technology Expo and experience the world of agribusiness. December 15th at Grand Park in Westfield. More details at IndianaFarmExpo.com.
Much colder air dominates the Hoosier landscape this weekend. I'm Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin with Hoosier Ag Today's Indiana Farm Forecast Weekend Edition. And we've got a dramatic change in pattern that is underway right now. It actually started yesterday, a cold front pushing in from the west. This cold front was responsible for a massive snowstorm and blizzard up in the northern plains. They only had about 5 to 11 inches of snow, but winds at 50 miles an hour and temperatures dropping like a rock. Yeah, it didn't foster any love for the winter season up north. And that front's coming towards us. It doesn't have the liquid, doesn't have the precipitation potential that they had up there, but we do have some very strong gusty winds that'll be here for your Saturday and your Sunday, and we're looking at temperatures dropping. Now, we've had a nice run, with the exception of a period there in early to mid-October where we were a little bit below normal and we had some frosts and freezes in here. We've been quite warm with regard to normal all the way through this fall. Well, it stops now. We're going to be spending this next week about a good 10 to 15 degrees below normal on daytime highs and overnight lows. So we're definitely getting jerked back to reality. I think this cold air surges all the way into the week of Thanksgiving through the week of the 21st there. So we'll talk about that here in a little bit. Let's talk about the mechanics near term. So the cold air is here. The strong winds are here for your weekend. With that, I think we're going to have to keep an eye out for some lake effect precipitation. I don't think it's a big amount, but I would not rule out sloppy wet snowflakes being around here off and on through your Saturday, particularly if you get yourself up into the northern tier counties of the state. Same thing tomorrow. I wouldn't rule out some lake effect in far north central Indiana, but the rest of us are probably fine. Monday looks partly sunny and chilly. So in central and southern Indiana, Monday is going to look a lot like probably what we end up with later today and tomorrow. But Tuesday, we do have some moisture coming up from the southwest. I think Tuesday is the day that we can actually see snow accumulation anywhere in the state of Indiana. It's not just lake effect, it's anywhere. This system coming up out of Texas, moving across Arkansas, Missouri, Illinois, right into Indiana. Liquid equivalencies aren't big, a few hundreds to maybe two or three tenths, but we're in cold air already, so sloppy snowflakes, you betcha. I think the best threat is likely going to be north, but the threat is everywhere at this point in time through Tuesday and into early Wednesday. Then we have some wraparound moisture that triggers light snow and flurry action off and on Wednesday afternoon into early Thursday. Once again, more to the north than anywhere else, but I won't rule it out central and south. Lake effect could be an issue on through the end of the week and weekend in Michigan, but not so much down in Indiana. Reinforcing shot of cold air next Saturday afternoon, and we stay chilly into the week of the 21st. I'm Ryan Martin.
For generations, Indiana farmers have grown crops to supply our country. Now, a new crop is on the horizon, solar power. A huge majority of Hoosiers support the right of farmers to use their land as they please. And all across Indiana, more than 120 renewable energy projects are sprouting. Solar energy also helps us stay energy independent, generating electrons right here on Hoosier soil. Learn more at HoosiersForRenewables.com.
Come and see the future at the Indiana Farm Equipment and Technology Expo, December 13 through 15, Grand Park Event Center, Westfield, Indiana. See the equipment and inputs you will need in 2023 and the technology you will farm with in 2033. Free admission, free parking, free seminars, and on December 14, free breakfast. The Indiana Farm Equipment and Technology Expo, December 13 through 15, Grand Park Event Center, Westfield. Details at IndianaFarmExpo.com.
Welcome back to Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm CJ Miller with Hoosier Ag Today. Well, Mexico's upcoming ban on U.S. imports of genetically modified corn or corn grown with glyphosate won't be changed in any way. Well, that's according to Mexico's deputy ag minister, but an Indiana ag leader who serves in Washington, D.C., says he doesn't believe that Mexico will end up going through with their ban.
I have very high hopes that the USMCA rules that were adopted will come into play, and that will get straightened out, mostly because it has to.
And that's Ted McKinney, CEO of NASDA, the National Association of the State Departments of Agriculture. McKinney says the U.S. has been respectful of Mexico's decision not to deviate from their longtime corn production methods.
This all started back when biotech came along, and they said, we're not going to plant any of that because we, Mexico, are the origin of maize. Well, okay, but we've been developing plants and animals since the Garden of Eden, or whatever your starting point would be. And so it's a little interesting to find that you're not going to advance your agriculture and your productivity and the will of your people. But that's what it is, and so we've respected that. Well, now, you know, that's starting to change a little bit, and those impositions are being thrown back at us and our farmers.
McKinney says that new corn hybrid developments here in the U.S. have not yet been used because of that issue.
And the troubling part is there are some traits now that are being held back. They have not been placed in new hybrids because of that and because of the respect for that market. We've got to get that straightened out.
McKinney believes that Mexico has too much to lose if they end up going through with their import ban.
And I think pressure will grow on them, not just from the U.S., but from many countries, Brazil, Argentina, and others, because it's not science. It's not well-founded. But they need our corn and our soy meal and whatever else. They need it. They can't go anywhere else and get it for anywhere near the price of what it comes from the U.S. So it's got to get fixed.
Mexico's ban is set to take effect on January 31st, 2024. Well, the Mississippi River is at its lowest levels since 1988. It's slowing down the transport of newly harvested grain to be exported overseas. It's also creating a bottleneck effect of grain back here at home.
Certainly not business as usual that we're used to going down the Mississippi River.
And that's Rick Hollister, senior merchant and market analyst with the Andersons. With fewer barges and lighter loads, some grain terminals along the river had recently stopped taking in corn and soybeans.
You just wonder what it'll take to get the water levels there in the Mississippi to recover. We have seen a couple fronts move through. You know, they're hopeful that that would at least have a little bit of an impact, but so far it's hard to see where that impact is.
Rick says the slowdown of grain shipments along the Mississippi River means more pressure is being put on rail transportation.
The market is kind of finding a way around getting some soybeans down to the Gulf of Mexico and other places like Biloxi by train car. There's just not a lot of freight available to do that as well.
The challenge, though, is the possibility of a rail worker strike.
Certainly concerning again, because we thought we sort of had that figured out and we're past it. But it does look like we get past harvest now before anything dramatic would happen, which would be good for the grain industry, of course, or growers that are trying to finish up harvest and get grain moved to town. And you can only do that when the place you're hauling into town has a place to go with it beyond.
Because of the drought, the cost to ship a ton of corn or soybeans down the Mississippi River has skyrocketed from $30 around Labor Day to $105 by mid-October. Well, Indiana is the fourth leading producer of turkeys in the U.S., and with the busy Thanksgiving production season already in full swing, the state's poultry producers are faced with a labor shortage. That's why Indiana's poultry industry is asking for help from lawmakers.
We just plain and simple don't have enough workers to do all the work we have here in Indiana.
And that's Rebecca Yonishgan, president of the Indiana State Poultry Association. Farm operations hiring temporary workers from other countries can only use those workers for several months out of the year. And while that may work for seasonal jobs at fruit and vegetable farms, the livestock industry is trying to get legislation passed that would allow those workers to stay on the job year-round.
These are live animals. You can't just tell the birds to idle and stop growing and stop producing eggs. This is a living system that is very scheduled and planned. It can't just stop on a dime and wait for labor to arrive. So it has very real and immediate effects up and down the food supply chain.
Yonishgan says a labor shortage at the farms means a shortage of turkeys available at the grocery stores for your Thanksgiving dinner.
Sometimes at the processing facilities, if we don't have enough workers, we're just not able to provide our customers with the cuts of poultry and packaging that they expect. So it limits our ability to satisfy our customers and the consumers at the grocery.
To try and solve that problem, the U.S. House in March of 2021 passed the Farm Workforce Modernization Act. It would modify the current H-2A work visa program. Yonash Gan and others in the ag industry are now asking lawmakers in the U.S. Senate to pass that bill as well.
Within it are programs that can really plug some gaps in this system and help support our work and our workers. We very much appreciate the efforts of Representative Jim Baird in the House, and we encourage Senators Young and Braun from Indiana to throw their support behind it as well.
Read more at HoosierAgToday.com. I'm CJ Miller with Hoosier Ag Today, and this is Hoosier Ag This Week.
In this Pioneer Field Update, I'm joined by agronomist Lance Shepherd from Northeast Indiana. And Lance, what I continue to hear is that this year, across the state, soybeans were good, not great, and that corn yields have been surprising, pleasantly surprising. Is that what you hear too?
I would agree wholeheartedly with the comments you made. Soybeans are average, probably in that 50 to 60 bushel range, I would say, across my geography. Corn, definitely surprising. Good yields, especially even in areas where we had excessive moisture, ground out areas. All in all, it has been a good year, and it's surprisingly positive here at harvest time.
You can hear more from Pioneer agronomist Lance Shepherd in our full interview at HoosierAgToday.com, where we talk about seed selection for 2023. This has been a Pioneer Field Update with Hoosier Ag Today.
Everyone wants energy independence, reliability, and security. Most Hoosiers see solar as a homegrown energy source that is clean, reliable, and affordable. Solar energy strengthens our communities by providing millions of dollars for local needs, while farmers and landowners receive stable, long-term benefits. Our path to energy independence is through renewable energy. Learn more at HoosiersForRenewables.com.
Come and see the future at the Indiana Farm Equipment and Technology Expo December 13 through 15, Grand Park Event Center, Westfield, Indiana. See the equipment and inputs you will need in 2023 and the technology you will farm with in 2033. Free admission, free parking, free seminars, and on December 14, free breakfast. The Indiana Farm Equipment and Technology Expo December 13 through 15, Grand Park Event Center, Westfield. Details at IndianaFarmExpo.com.
Welcome back to Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm Eric Pfeiffer from Hoosier Ag Today. I had the opportunity recently to tour the Purdue University Swine Environmental Research Building in West Lafayette to learn about the work they're doing to help educate the future pork farmers of Indiana. Scott Radcliffe is the assistant department head in the Department of Animal Sciences at Purdue.
It's a truly unique facility. It really lets us look at whole barn mass balance, so we can look at all the nutrients that come into the barn, whether that's in the pigs that come in or the feed that comes in or even the incoming air. And we can also measure all the nutrients that go out, so we can quantitatively collect the manure from 24 different manure pits. We can measure the air that goes out of each of the 12 rooms and look at the emissions.
Radcliffe says the focus of the facility is on the nutrition, physiology, genetics, management, behavior, and welfare of swine.
So I think the overall goal of this facility is to really be able to reduce the environmental footprint of swine production, doing that in a way that's economically sustainable by the farmer, socially acceptable by the public, and that we maintain or improve upon the welfare and the well-being of those animals in that process.
Radcliffe explains some of the research they've conducted to that end.
We've done a lot of research looking at lowering the nitrogen content of the diet by feeding lower protein diets and bringing in synthetic amino acids, and we've been able to quantify that impact not just on nitrogen excretion, but also nitrogen emissions in the form of ammonia. We've also looked at rearing pigs with and without antibiotics. And so we've looked at the ability of what happens if we go completely antibiotic free and what impact that can potentially have on the environmental footprint of the facility.
Radcliffe tells Hat that student interest in the Department of Animal Sciences is increasing. 20 years ago, they had around 300 undergrad students in the program. That number has now grown to around 700
undergraduate students. If you're considering some variations in your crop mix next year, Andy Eubank checks in now with one suggestion.
As harvest winds down for 2022, it's being called an excellent crop year for some farmers who grew non-GMO soybeans. Jeff Johnson, president of Benson Hill Seeds, says Indiana specifically showed very good returns.
We're excited because we not only saw good yields, so the quantity of production, but the quality of the production, that output of specialty traits like ultra-high protein levels in the soybeans or high lake oil, those qualities were at target or better in Indiana.
Benson Hill is now offering 2023 contracting opportunities here in Indiana. Johnson says their program name says it all. Plant for profit, harvest the future.
They can make more ROI per acre, so economically it makes sense. And I think they feel good about what they're doing because they see the consumer benefit of what they're producing and the environmental impact of how they're doing it.
And what is in that contract?
Provides the farmer a premium over what they would get on the Chicago Board of Trade for the specialty production, for keeping that separate and identity preserved and growing that product out. But then there's several premiums that give growers opportunities. For example, we have coming next week on the 15th, if they commit before then, we have extra discounts per bushel. It's actually premiums they would get per bushel of production for committing. So there's some really short-term opportunities for Indiana growers with that. We also reward them for the number of acres they're growing and how they control that product.
Get more details at their website and in the Full Hat interview with Johnson at our website, HoosierAgToday.com. I'm Andy Eubank.
All right, Andy, thanks. Well, it's bad enough that diesel fuel is costing you about $1.90 more per gallon today than this time last year. But now there are concerns the diesel supplies are running extremely low. CJ Miller has the story.
In certain pockets of the country, there's a real and growing concern about availability of diesel.
And that's Mike Steenhook, executive director of the Soy Transportation Coalition. He says a number of different factors are leading to a shortage of diesel fuel.
The war in Ukraine has certainly contributed to that. The fact that we haven't had additional refining capacity that's been built, but yet when you've got demand for diesel that has remained quite robust throughout the course of the pandemic to this day, you get into this supply-demand kind of tightening. And so that's certainly a part of it as well. The inland waterway system transports, in addition to grain and things like fertilizer and aggregates, but it also transports a lot of energy products, including petroleum products. And so that's certainly contributing to it as well.
He says diesel fuel shortages are having an impact on farm operations and this year's harvest.
For farmers, there are certain pockets where I'm hearing supplies are more limited, scarce. I've had a couple farmers tell me that the availability is day to day. But I think overall, this is something that is going to be an emerging concern in this country.
Steenhook says the diesel fuel shortages couldn't have come at a worse time, considering the drought along the Ohio and Mississippi rivers that have slowed down grain exports.
Hearing some concerns from farmers who are located close to the inland waterway system, and some of the supplies do occur via barge. And so that obviously is another industry that's impacted by the challenges confronting our inland waterway system. But I do think that this is a trend that we're going to be hearing more of.
Recently, the Energy Information Administration reported that the U.S. only has 25 days worth of diesel fuel in storage. I'm CJ Miller.
And with that, you are now up to date on all things Indiana agriculture. Stay up to date by tuning in each and every weekday to this Hat Station and by finding us online at HoosierAgToday.com. We'll do it again next weekend, same Hat time, same Hat channel. This time, though, from Kansas City and the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Annual Convention. Talk to you then. I'm Eric Pfeiffer, Hoosier Ag Today, Indiana's Farm Network.